Welcome to the DeMartini Show, the podcast for visionaries. If you're on a mission to empower your life and you'd love to do something truly meaningful for your community, nation, or world, then you're in the right place right now. With the current pandemic, it's more apparent than ever the value of financial empowerment. In this session, Dr. DeMartini addresses both what to do if you have a cushion and also if you're just starting out on your financial journey. Make sure you have a pen and paper ready because you're going to be taking loads of notes as Dr. DeMartini shares incredible value and practical steps that you can start working on today. So let's get started.
The first question that we've got is, you know, many people, they've got a bit of finances or they've got a bit of liquidity in terms of what they can invest. What advice would you give to them in terms of how to structure or how to invest wisely during this time?
Well, when the St. Corona came in, the markets adjusted and went down and did quite a bit of a correction in most countries. In the US, we bottomed out about a week and a half ago, almost 2 weeks ago, and it's now gradually going back up. So the general market is still going to climb in all probability, at least another 10%, my guess, at least another 10%. So right now is opportunity. And if you try to select individual stocks, you may be gambling a bit, although you could also make great returns, potentially, depending on which disruptive company you're buying. If you have some sort of skill at the selection process and been doing your evaluations and watching them, tracking and et cetera, then there's opportunities to buy there. But as a general rule, I'm more a diversifier. I spread out my risks into more areas because some companies can be so disrupted by this that they could actually have a larger return time to get back to normal. And so as a result of it, I like to diversify, as you've heard me say, into indexes and more diversified. And I did that, and I'm very pleased with already what the results have been. And I know the results are going to go up further. So right now is a buying opportunity. It's not as good as it was 2 weeks ago when everybody was seeing doomsday, but it's a buying opportunity. And there's a recovery period that's soon coming. So anytime you buy probably now, you're probably going to get a nice return. Not as good as you could have, but it's now right at the mean in America. And when it's below the mean, you got value stocks. When it goes above the mean, you got less valued stocks, but you're going to get appreciation because it's still below what it had been. And so in all probability, buying would be to your advantage. But you don't want to go and put all your money in there without having liquidity. And I've said before in my seminars, the absolute bare minimum liquidity is 3 months. 6 months is more ideal. The biggest and greatest companies have minimum 40% of a gross income of the year, but preferably some of them go all the way to 100% like Microsoft. And the people I know that are smart have lots of cash on hand and always keep cash on hand for these type of opportunities, because this is definitely an opportunity, this coronavirus. So I would be doing that and buying a diversified index right now in your thing. I would look at where the history of the mean of what that your basic stock index is and take a look at it. And I'll be willing to bet that it's right at the mean or right below or right at the mean. And it's still a buying time. You're still going to make some money pleasantly in the next few weeks or months for sure. And then it's going to ride up again. So I would dollar cost averaging starting now. Put whatever amount you have that doesn't erode your cash reserve, and then put that in, buy it now before you lose any opportunity, because it's going to be up in a week, it'll be gone. And then start dollar cost averaging and allowing yourself to get an average yield that's fair.
And that was, what would you suggest? Would you suggest just to get gradually into the market, or should you put bigger amounts in, or what would you suggest for that?
Well, I am a firm believer that you want your cash reserve, whatever you have reserved over that. If it's absolutely low and you know it's going to go up like it's been, I'd put as much as you can do as long as you don't erode the capital reserve. Whatever capital reserve for the recovery time objectives that you'll need, if you think that it's going to take you 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, whatever length of time to get back to where you were in your business, you need to have a little bit of reserve extra for that. So you factor that in because you need cash reserve. And anything else in that, I would take advantage of the opportunities in the market, because right now that's a good buying time. And now, like I said, I'll use the Dow as an example in America. The Dow dropped to 18,000 and it's now 23.7. So it's gone up 5,000 points in the last 12 days. I was blessed to buy it down there and I've been recuperating from that. It's just been a great return. But at the same time, if you're now at the mean, you're still worthy of buying. It's still going to be a buy. Anytime you're at the mean or below, you're at a good buy time. Anything is roughly within 10% of that mean, you're still going to get some return out of it. So I would take whatever's left, I would put it in the market.
And is the same principles applied across all countries in terms of what you've
done? Well, if there's massive infrastructure destroyed, it may take longer to get those returns back. But anytime you're below the mean, you're going to probably be to your advantage. I mean, all you have, as Ellis says, you need a 25 minimum year mean. I'd say, see, that we had a crash in the 70s. We had another one in 87. We had one in 2000. We had one in 2008-9. And now we're having 2020. So they average around 9 to 11 years on average, the cycles. I've seen it as quick as 7. I've seen it go up to 13. But it's about 9 to 11 years is an average time. And when I see the market is above the mean, I start accumulating cash, as I've been doing now. And then when I see it finally go down, I buy as much as I can. And so right now we're going to have a period of probably a sustainable period of some growth again. But we're going to have, I mean, people are going to be freaking out like that and they're going to be a doomsdayist, but I don't pay attention to doomsday or glooms, you know, or zoomsday. I see the market, I take the objectives. I found you need at least a 25 to 30 year average return on the market to get an idea what the mean is. That's what Ellis uses, a minimum of 25 years. That way you get three cycles of up and down, gives you an idea where that mean is. And that's the projection of what that economy will probably give. It's not a guarantee, nothing's a guarantee, but you got mathematics working in your favor. So yes, anytime, if you've got at least say 4 months of capital, maybe minimum, and you've got some extra capital, you can put a few thousand or 100,000 or whatever you got in there, and you can grab the market, I'd be buying the market.
And Dr. DeMartini here from Honey Carrot, would you recommend to borrow cash to invest?
Right now, with the interest rates really down at, you know, ridiculously low rates, depends on what country you're in, we can get and borrow cash at 2%, 3%. If you have plenty of capital and you've got enough reserve capital that you can go borrow money from the bank and get it at that, and you put it in there and you're buying it, you're doing sort of like a margin loan. If you know the market's way below the mean and you know you're going to get returns on it, you can use other people's money to do it. But that's a bit more sophisticated than average. But yeah, if you can borrow money at 3% and you can go and make 10% on it, that's using other people's money to make you money. And then just know though that banks, when they borrow you, you know, they loan you money at any time they can recall it. And if there's any volatility or fluctuation in the market during that time and it goes down, they can recall it. So just know you need to have liquid capital on the side. I would never borrow more than what you have in liquid capital as a backup, so you don't ever have to sell some of the stock that's going up if it goes down again. So you just want to make sure you know your math and think it through. But borrowing other people's money is to make money is okay. It's called leveraging. But I'd say make sure you do only the amount that you know, worst case scenario, if the banks recall the loan and you had to do it and the market had a volatility and dropped and they called it right on that spot, make sure you have enough liquid capital that they will not recall the loan. As long as you've got capital in reserve and they know that, they're not going to recall the loan.
Good. And what is your opinion about investing in bonds as it stands now?
Well, it depends. The feds are basically are utilizing and buying them back, you might say. They're buying it because of the low rates. Right now, I think the stock market is probably a wiser place to grab because of it being down and it's going back up more than bonds. I'd rather be buying. Right now, the bonds are still not worth buying, in my opinion.
Super. And then Dr. DeMartini, I know that was more the technical aspects of it. Let's go to the human behavior side of it. The people that did not prepare for this, What would you say is a mindset for a great investor?
For great investors?
Yeah, or how do you develop a great mindset for investing? Or what is it to have a great mindset, to be a great investor?
Well, the first thing you have is a real value on it. I just did an interview last night on multifamily syndicate investing. In fact, I'm having another meeting tonight with the owner of the company. He wants to talk about some opportunities where it's a real estate investment where people pool their money and buy apartment complexes and have somebody manage the entire thing, and you get passive income out of it. And it's one of the options. There's many thousands of options of investing out there. And that's one vehicle of real estate. Right now, that's going to be a very interesting area because they're going to probably have a lot of people. They're going to be not defaulting a bit on their rents and mortgages and things like that. So that's very challenging at this moment, but there's many types of investments. So I think the wisest thing to do is to make a commitment to raise the value of wealth building on your list of values. First, do the value determination process to find out where it is. And you may not, normally I ask you to answer three answers per value determination, determinant question. You know, how do you fill your space, how you spend your time and things that I gave you here. Then what I would do is I would do four or five answers on each. Instead of three, do four or five, because I found out that probably 70% of the people that do the value determination do not even have wealth on their list of values. They don't even have it on there. They're used to spending money, not saving and investing money. So first do evaluation of where your values are, where wealth is on that value list, by answering four or, if necessary, five answers for those 13 questions. Once you identify where it is and you realize if it's in the top four, you have the high probability of becoming wealthy financially. If it's down below five, six, seven, eight, nine, whatever, you're going to spend money on everything else. You're not going to focus on wealth building. You're not going to study it. You're not going to learn about it. You're not going to put your money into things that are assets. You don't probably even know what an asset is. So the first thing is to look at where it is, because that tells you your life. Then go and make a list of the amount of money you've ever earned in your life, total amount you've ever earned and come into your life from working. And look at what your net worth is now, and look at what percentage that net worth is of the total amount of income. And if that's under 10 to 15%, that means you have a very low value on wealth building. If it's more than that, you have a higher value on money. That's about a break point. If you're 20 years old, if you were saving 10%, you could be financially independent at 65. If you're 30 years old, you need to be saving 20%. If you're 40 years old, 30%. If you're 50 years old, 40%. If you're 60 years old, 50%. So the older you are versus the percentage of what you're saving tells you if you have any mindset for wealth building. So if you've earned $1 million or $10 million, or whatever the number is, $100 million, and you now have $20,000 there, then it's a very tiny percentage, which means you have no value on buying assets. You have a value on lifestyle and buying consumables that depreciate. So first get real about where you are. You need to know where you are. Then I would add up all your assets and get all your liabilities on the table and find out what your net worth is right now. And look at what that is relative to how much you've earned. And get grounded and get real about it. If so, if you find out that you have a low value on money and it's low on your values, you got a choice. You could either give up on the fantasy you're going to be financially well off and just live day to day and pray for some miracle to happen later on in your life or your kids to take care of you. Or you can get serious and get grounded and get real about what your values are and actually go, okay, it's time to raise the values. In my program, The 6 Steps to Wealth, I talk about six things you can do, six action steps to raise the value of wealth building. But any action step that is proven to help people build wealth, if you write all those down from what you're learning is, or go on The 6 Steps to Wealth, if you go in there and write down the benefits of having those action steps incorporated into your life and how they'll serve your highest value currently and how it'll be generally, what would be the benefit of it, you're going to increase the probability of making decisions according to wealth building now. Because whatever you get more advantage on over disadvantage is what you'll do. So if you don't have stacked up enough advantages on doing the actions that build wealth, it's not going to happen. And you pass up this great opportunity right now to be making money. There's going to be a great surge of the economy here. It's coming up in the next few months and definitely year. So right now is a great opportunity. So write down the where your values are, look at what your net worth is, look at what the reality is about how valuable wealth is in your life. Get grounded, don't live in fantasy, not the way it should be or ought to be, but the way it is. And then start stacking up the benefits of every action step you have found that has helped build wealth. Number one is to make sure that you're actually dedicated to serving people so you have a source of income. Make two, make sure you prioritize what you're doing and making sure you're doing the most effective and efficient actions on a daily basis, the highest priority things that generate and produce the most income, that inspire you, that serve people. Three, make sure you're managing that money more effectively, where you're cutting costs and trimming the fat and making sure it's efficient so you can get a profit. And then you want to save, automate it, the savings. There's no emotion about it. Just automate it. It's the best thing I ever did in my life financially. Without a doubt, I've become financially independent because of one thing. I did an automatic savings that I accelerated and increased every quarter. And that has been the smartest thing I ever did financially. That made sure that I had liquid capital to start investing with. And it increased it, which compressed my business and lowered the cost ratio compared to the return. It's amazing how it works, because if you don't put order to your finances, entropy takes over and unexpected bills keep eroding it. You got to make sure that you put your money into savings and investments before unexpected bills take it from you. Unexpected bills are symptoms of not having a value in wealth building. That's all it is. You don't have order in your office. So then we did a fourth savings. So that's the third action step. The fourth one is actually now learning about investments. And because most people are not specialists in that area, and even alpha hunters out there and doing aggressive mutual fund management, hedge fund management, and venture capital management, they don't beat the passive index funds generally. The new report just came out proving that. And if you go and buy an index in a small cap to mid cap to or large cap or full spectrum, full stock market index, you're going to actually beat out most of the people, because you can have the lowest turnover rate, the lowest expense ratio, and you're going to get a better return, particularly right now. So then you do a four savings and you dollar cost average into the savings, and then you start dollar cost averaging into investments after you have at least 3 to 6 months worth of liquid capital. After that, you want to then go and give yourself a reason for accumulating wealth. Because if you don't have a reason for it, the second you get financially independent, you'll just start buying clutter and buying stuff that depreciates and fill up a house and fill up this. I was calculating, I was looking at condos here in Houston and looking, because I'm watching the drop in the values. People are desperately trying to sell things and stuff. And I'm watching, it's going to go down for a while. And in the process of doing that, you know, even if the cost of doing that, the taxes, the maintenance, the repairs, the furniture, all the stuff and everything else, you're wiser to actually rent the thing in some places, and invest the difference in some cases. You need to run the numbers and think about where you're living, because some people get this security idea, oh, I got to have a place. That may or may not be to your advantage as far as wealth building. Run the numbers and let's take a look. And then you accumulate it and then have some cause for it, because you're going to accumulate enough beyond your own life over time if you really have a value on it and you need to do something with it. You need an estate plan to look at what you're going to do and where is it going to be left. You know, what are you going to do with it afterwards? You're not likely to die broke. You're not going to go, okay, I'm going to die on this day. I'm going to run out of money and the last dollar on that. So you're probably going to have accumulation of wealth. You need to think about what you're going to do. Are you going to give taxes away? And depending on the country you're in, death taxes, or are you going to end up not using it with planning? You're going to let other people take advantage of that instead of you deciding that. So those are action steps that are proven to work. But if you're not studying wealth building, I have a Secrets to Financial Success program. If you haven't studied that, it's insane not to take advantage of it. But if you're not studying and learning about it, you're not interested in it. When you really value something, you study it, you learn about it, you mentor under it, you get ideas on it, you practice it, you apply it. That's a sign you really have a value on wealth building. So stacking up the advantages and to the advantages of doing the action steps approved to accumulate wealth is higher on your values than immediate gratification and consumerism. Because consumerism is a symptom of an unfulfilled mission. When you're doing work that's inspiring to you, you get philanthropic and you get wealth-oriented. When you're doing a work that's not inspiring to you, that makes you money, but it's not inspiring to you, you go to debauchery and you go into consumerism to compensate.
And then next, Dr. DiMartino, I've got a question from Nick. How should someone who has no capital or savings play in this period?
Well, if you're not having capital, the reason why we don't have capital is because we're not serving people. So I'd be focusing on the highest priority thing is what is the needs in the market? The way you serve people is to find out their voids, their needs. And then you find out what your voids and needs are and your skills, which gives you the competitive advantage. In Ricardo's law of economics, the competitive advantage of an individual is always an expression of what they value most. That's where they're going to get the best returns. And then the key is to then take whatever that product, service, or idea is that's unique to them, that matches their values, that they're inspired and can't wait to do and deliver, matches and overlaps where the market is. And when you find a market that has a need and you have this, boom. I'll give an example. I had a gentleman who came to Australia who was during master planning, he mapped out a strategy on how to trace people in case of pandemics, who had the illness, and they were able to trace it and narrow it down and where they are and how far they are on a GPS system. And he ended up working on that. And by God, he got the Australian government to be involved in it. And now I think some other governments possibly. And he looked at where the needs of the world might be, and he nailed it. And then he found out what his love was, which is technology and healthcare, and he merged those together, and he's now making a fortune. So the key is to make sure you find out what people need, because if you don't care about human beings enough to fill their needs, there's not going to be a source of income. I'd be focusing on how can I serve needs right now, so I have an income source. There's never a lack of money to somebody who's filling needs and serving needs. I learned that when I was a kid. When I was 9 years old and I had my first little company, I had no problem going to the neighbors and looking around their yards for something to do that I could do to make their yards more attractive. And I found it. And then I cleaned garages and I did whatever it took to fill needs. And I was always able to get money. There's never lack of potential money for people who are filling a true need. And when we have these chronic so-called disaster recovery systems, that means that there's new needs. That's all it means. Disaster just means new needs. That's all it means. You have to adjust and find out and have resiliency to find out what the new needs are and meet those needs now. You know, when they had the tsunami in Phuket and the Maldives, believe it or not, the guys that cleaned up were the bicycle tire people. The guys that had rubber could repair tires of the people, because all the tires were having nails and debris and getting flat tires. And these guys made fortunes off repairing bicycles and repairing bicycle tires, because bicycles were everywhere. And motorcycle bikes. So there had a massive need there, and that's what went booming. Right now, Amazon just hired 100,000 people just a week or two ago. Why? Because everybody's online, and massive online business is booming. And so Amazon is like in a surge. So there's always an opportunity in every crisis, but you have to have resilience and adaptability to find out what that is and find out in the overlapping niche that you have skills in where you can do it. Or find somebody who can deliver that, and you can be a broker of that and get income if you don't have any income coming in. But find some needs. It starts with needs. That's the first one. Find out what your highest values, find out what the biggest number of people's highest values, the bigger the problem you solve.
Listen up. Imagine knowing with absolute certainty that your life is working for you, that you're on track, and that you're making progress towards the goals and dreams that you desire every day. If you've been an avid listener to this podcast, you'll have heard Dr. DeMartini mention his signature program, The Breakthrough Experience. It's a two-day weekend seminar where he shows you how to take everything that you've been learning on this podcast and put it into practice so that you can gain the shifts that you most desire for your life. If you would love to transform your life, and if you've been a little bit uncertain where to start or how to get there, then join Dr. John DeMartini at The Breakthrough Experience so he can show you how. What you'll learn in these 2 days is truly life transforming. It's time to put the power in your hands to create your magnificent life. To find out more, go to demartini.fm/seminar. You can also access the link in the show notes below. We look forward to seeing you there. And now let's continue with this episode.
The bigger the potential income you can make.
And Dr. DeMartini, how important is emotions, or what part does emotions play in wealth building?
They don't. Emotions play a role in gambling, not investing. I have a friend that was doing some putting money into venture capital 3 weeks ago, right before this crazy, 4 weeks ago, and they deployed quite a bit of capital into it. And I looked at each of the investments. There were seven investments. And I said that probably two of them will make a lot of money and probably five of them will probably not do as well. If not, they might not even, there's a lot of competition. They probably won't even get off the ground. And I've studied a bit of venture capital and the applications of using that as an investment strategy. And most of the time, the venture capitalists will tell you about their big home runs, but they won't tell you about their losses. But when I did some surveys on it, I found out that their net return after cost, after high fees, after gambling, after patience, waiting, and everything else is not necessarily greater than a good old passive index. I can show you, Kaufman did a report on that, and he was in the top 36 venture capital companies in America. And he was in the top 36, but he was actually one of the highest producers. And he looked at his returns versus the other one, he didn't beat it. And so it was actually 5.8%. The other one was 7.2%. So no, I think gambling is not the answer. Emotions are gambling messages. I think the key is to have an objective, a strategy, a long-term positioning, and be patient and keep putting money into the market. You lower the taxes for long-term capital gains. You have the lowest cost. You have the most patient returns. The thing that erodes returns is cost. You know, the taxes, because if you go and buy and sell and buy and sell, you got short-term capital gains, you have taxes. If you go long-term, you reduce those taxes to 20%, which long-term capital gain. Then you got all the fees involved in that, management fees. Then you got to guess and distract yourself from your primary source of income, unless that's your business. There's lots of distractions there. And anything that distracts your mind and causes volatilities and emotions usually undermines potential wealth building. I'm a very simple, methodical, strategic system. I only put a bit of gamble in there on a 1 to 10 year cycle, those cycles that I call credit cycles. And about every 8, 9, 10, 11 years, I grab it. I've done it now. This is my third time. The fourth one I didn't get, four back in the 70s I didn't get, but everyone since I've been getting, and each one greater returns. And I just, because you don't have to really do any rocket science timing. You know, there's a crash, you know, there's panic. People are going to be selling, it's time to buy. So I've taken advantage of that, but I just dollar cost average and keep saving, investing, and just keep serving people and investing.
And then Dr. Nimartin, I got you one from Brendan Rakusen. Can you please explain how do you calculate or the market index mean, or what sites you use in terms of getting to the market mean?
Well, let's just use there's a Ibbotson charting company. There's many charting companies, but Ibbotson's one I've used because of the contact I've made. But Ibbotson has a charting, and so does the London School of Economics keeps charts. They have 120-year charts, and they've got a record of everything that's ever hit the market around the world. They chart every market around the world, of everything from commodities to real estate to small cap stocks, mid cap stocks, large cap stocks, IPOs, any possible thing in the market that's out there, they chart it. And they give you those charts, and you can buy those charts or get those charts or look online on the charts. They're complimentary in many cases, or you can get a report that gives you those charts. And it's not that hard to do. If you go to the S&P 500, you go to the Dow, you go to Russell 2000, you go to any of these indexes or the any of the indexes in any country, you can go online and you can get the history. And if you take the history and take where it is and run a line all the way through it, you get an angle of what that is. That inclined plane tells you basically what the mean is. And you can look at the ups and downs and get just an average up and down looking at it. It's not that difficult to do. And it'll tell you it's averaging 6 to 7 to 8% or whatever it is, 5%, 10%. And that gives you your mean. And if you see it's above the mean, it's probably overpriced stock. If it's below the mean, it's probably a value stock. It's not rocket science. I can show people how to do that in about 10 minutes. And it's not that difficult to do. And all I know is that if you go on Ibbotson, it gives you the charting and you can get a sense for it. But if you go online, if I go type in Dow, for instance, right now, just go do Dow, and where is it? It'll tell you where it is today. But then if you go Dow history, and then it'll have you a thing of 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, the entire history. Okay, that's all the way back before the turn of the 20th century. And you can go back there and it's now 120 something years, 120 plus years. And you can get a history of that Dow, where if you put a dollar in, where it would be today. Okay, that's sort of where it is. Now, it was at a high, it went down. But if you look at what the average mean is, I calculated 23.5 at the mean, 23,500, that was the mean. Right now, it's just at the mean and it's starting to go above the mean. For the last 2.5 weeks, it's been 10 to 15% below the mean. So I got 10 to 15% on my money immediately as it's back to the mean now. So that if you go put $1 million in there, you made 100,000. Put $5 million in there, you made, 500,000. It's quite quick in how you can get a return on it.
And then the next one, Dr. DeMartini from Nick, wants to know, what is the future of Bitcoin? What is your perception around that?
I wouldn't touch it. If you want a dollar call, if you want to trade it as a trader, as a commodity trader, the only people who are going to make money in Bitcoin are the people buying and selling and buying and selling and taking money off people that don't know any better. I wouldn't touch it. I did a whole presentation in Japan 2 years and 3 months ago, 2 years and 3 months ago on Bitcoin. And if you can find it, it's DeMartini-cryptocurrencies-Japan or whatever. See if you can find it. Watch it. And so far, I wouldn't touch it. The reason being is the blockchain industry is a dead end. I know that everybody gives you all these fantasies about it, but blockchain is a dead end. There's no way that's going to be sustainable because the mining costs are too high. The value on the return on what they're going to pay people is going down. Their growth has not been anywhere near what they expected. It's a dead end. I wouldn't touch it. I'd buy companies that serve people that have a high probability of being in existence. I'll give you an example. You can see that almost any tech company can rise and fall. Samsung could be in and out of business someday. So tech companies are reliant volatility of which ones are doing it, unless they've got incredible amount of capital like Apple does. They're the only ones that have the capital. Because they got the capital, if there's a competition or whatever, they can adjust and they can do it and they won't go out of business. But I would be buying something that people use that you know they're going to use 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now. In other words, how many of you know that most of you probably wipe your ass at least occasionally?
Especially during this time with all the
toilet paper. Toilet paper is going to be around, as far as I can tell, is for a long time. Unless they have, now I just saw a video. I just saw a video of the guy that was, oh God, it's Davy Crockett. See if you can find this video, Davy Crockett video. He didn't have toilet paper. He's in the woods and he's trying to go, what the hell? I got to take a number two, as they say. And so he captures a squirrel and uses a squirrel to wipe his ass. That's not the most efficient thing to do. But my advice is to buy things that you know people are going to use. Peanut butter companies, toothpaste companies, toilet paper companies, anything that has been on the shelves for many, many years. It doesn't have a lot of innovation required. It has a simple manufacturing process that goes to greater numbers of people as time goes on. Those are businesses that serve ever greater numbers of people. Any company that serves ever greater numbers of people that is a household necessity, those are investments. You're going to put money into something, the numbers are going to continue to grow, populations grow, people are going to still use it. They don't have to compete. There's not a lot of competition. They already run the market. Those are things that are investments. And then you can take a portion of your investments for disruptors. But I wouldn't put all my money into everything in disruptors. The people are just gambling on what the next disruptor is, I think is gamblers again. Buy companies that you know have a long-term track record. Mary Buffett has a business statement book, a financial statement interpretation book. There's a great little book by Mary Buffett. If you get a chance to read it, it'll give you an idea of what is a business to buy and what is not. And then what you can do is you can go into the indices and look at which have higher of those in it. And then you can put your money into an industry. But I've already done that. And I already found out that some of the larger spread industries have the most of those. And when some companies go out of business, you're covered because the ones that are going forward, you're still getting it. You're getting at least a nice average that you're returning. You're not having to gamble and guess because the people that guess are not necessarily smarter than the people that just sustain. But buying things that go and that continue to serve people is an investment. A gambling is a gambling on what you think it is instead of what has got some track record, et cetera. Now, it doesn't mean that there's always a guarantee. You know, you may find that some new improved toothpaste comes along. But Sensodyne is a toothpaste that millions of people use. You could buy some sort of Sensodyne. You could buy some sort of a peanut butter company, as I said. Buy a toilet paper company. by things that everybody uses on lotion or soap company. These are things. That's why Buffett bought Procter & Gamble, because all of those items that were real everyday users, one company kept buying the companies and getting majority shareholder on it, putting it into one company and did it. That's why he bought those things, because those are the things that are sustainable and they're going to be here 20 years from now, 50 years. And so those are quality companies that you buy. You're buying productivity. See, when you do a transaction with somebody, somebody pays money, somebody gives a service, that's sustainable. It's not a trade like an options trade where you win, they lose. It's a win-win. And anytime you put money into something that win-wins, which increases in population as time goes on, you're going to get a return, because you're going to get value of a capital gains growth, and you're also going to get dividends because they have to deploy some of that capital back to the people. Or you can reinvest the dividends, which is what I do, and just keep adding it to the growth of the capital, the long-term capital gains. So that way I lower my taxes. But if you do that, you're going to pick out a decent company. I would go and be looking for companies that serve ever greater numbers of people consistently, long-term, that has a great track record and has a future.
Thanks for that, Dr. DeMartini. I just want to be mindful of the time. It's 22 now. Do you still got time for a question?
A couple more.
Okay, beautiful. So the one I've got is from Alan Fleming. Dr. DeMartini, what is your thought on network marketing as a method of wealth building?
It depends on the personality. I know people who have made fortunes in it, who have the personality for it, that love constantly engaging, inspiring, and managing and leading growing numbers of followers and teams and their network. And if that matches their personality, I think it's a powerful way of getting and leveraging. I don't ever call it really passive income, though, because the second you take your eye off the ball, that whole thing can go down and collapse. And because you may have other people underneath you that give you residual income, but you still have to be engaged and keep them going and keep them inspired. So it's not this fantasy that, oh, I can do this for years, then I can relax. I think that's misleading. I think you have to have the personality that it takes to care enough about being a leader and inspiring teams, because you're going to babysit a lot of people, finding the right people in your team. You know, you may have to go through 5 people to get one person, or 10 people to get one person that's now a good team player. And you just keep building a team. And but I know some people in the multi-level and network marketing business that have done extremely well, made millions of dollars and have good residual income, but it's not totally passive. They have to work and have to keep managing and keep leading and keep dealing with fallout. You got to know the real numbers. I would go to the top of the line and go and talk to the people at the line and find out what they're doing. I would take the action steps that they've done to get there. I would link that to your highest values, and I'd make sure you have the personality for it. If you're a non-enthusiastically inspiring kind of person that you try to introvert yourself, that's probably not going to be your forte. But there's the structures allow people to make money, but it's misleading to think you're going to get total passive income without doing anything. You're going to have to keep inspiring and driving and guiding and leading and putting out fires and managing emotions of people in your teams below your downline consistently to build that. And even if you get way up to the top, if you don't passively invest in other forms of investments, so you don't have to rely on that, that thing can actually collapse. Because I know people that have had millions of dollars and the whole thing collapsed on them too, with lawsuits and all kinds of things. So don't put all your eggs into that basket. Take money out of it that you're earning. Don't live this fancy lifestyle until you've got cash earning you that lifestyle and investment giving you passive income. Do both. Do the networking as a source of income. And if you got some residual coming out of that, fantastic. But put that into quality investments and let passive income be generated on something that doesn't require your effort. And then do both. That's my advice. Just like if you're trading, if you make great money on trading, put some of it into passive investing where you got money coming in so you don't have to do it. I've had some people recently that they've all of a sudden, they're great making trade money, but then they don't have any passive income money. And all of a sudden the markets were volatile as hell. And they weren't making so much on their trades. It was scary. Because they sometimes gained, sometimes they lost. It was rocking their confidence. And then all of a sudden, they didn't have this over here to cushion it. I'm a conservative investor. Stick to it. I watched a beautiful a video on Lightbridge Investments yesterday. I watched a video of a gentleman who is in real estate, and he's very conservative. He runs the worst case scenario numbers and keeps it conservative. And he's just growing a beautiful portfolio slowly but surely. He's a young guy. And I was impressed. When I got interviewed right after him, I accoladed the guy. I said, what everything I heard about this guy was sound. So go and find out who this guy is. He's very sharp. So the point is, in fact,
But anyway, is there a link to a website or what?
I think I just tossed it. I have to go dig it. But his last name is Seamus. But anyway,
okay, I'll get his name from you, then I'll put it in the link.
But he's in a specialty real estate. He's into the multifamily syndicate kind of property development. So that's not for everybody. But I'm just saying, but what he said was sound. I didn't find anything he said that wasn't sound. He was very articulate. He was very equitable. He was very conscientious of his clients. And it was just what he said was like spot on. Brilliant. I was very impressed by a young guy.
Thank you for that, Dr. DeMartini. I just want to be mindful of your time, and I want to let everybody.
One more question.
One more question. I want to come back to, what is shame and guilt? So you've got a lot of shame and guilt in your life. What effect does that have on your, in terms of, being altruistic and narcissistic in terms of your money?
Well, emotions destroy wealth, and objective reason builds it. Strategies build it. That's been shown for centuries. It's nothing new. From Thales. Thales cornered the olive oil market back in his time, 2,700 years ago. And it's the same principles. It hasn't changed. And shame, which is a self-depreciation, let's just put it into context. Let's say you're doing a transaction with somebody. You're paying money. They're giving you a service. If they give you less service than what you paid for, you become narcissistic and you demand and you talk down to them and say, you owe me. So if you feel like you gave and you didn't get, you get narcissistic. If you feel that somebody gave you the service and you didn't pay the amount and you feel that they get narcissistic, you get now shame. So what happens is you feel you owe them. So whenever you get shame, you feel you owe people. Whenever you get narcissistic, you think somebody owes you. And narcissistic expects something for nothing. And altruists tend to want to give something for nothing. And so people that are altruistic and have accumulated shame and guilt tend to give people away and have compassion and go out and serve people, but have difficulty receiving. And people that are narcissistic have difficulty giving, but they love to receive. And people that are in fair exchange and have sustainability, they just give and receive, which is sustainable. Narcissism and altruism, neither one of them are sustainable. So shame and guilt is the number one thing that robs people of the willingness to receive, to value themselves, and to ask for what they want. And they feel like they'll sacrifice for others before they'll be willing to give for themselves. As a result of it, going through and doing the DeMartini method on yourself, on everything you feel shamed about, and find out how it served the people that you, whatever you did that you feel shamed about, and any bystanders there, and find out how it serves them and how it served you, what you learned from it. If you do that and raise that up, your willingness to ask for what you want and get what you want goes up. So the
number just relating to money or to anything, Dr. DeMartini, is that anything?
It's not just money. It's anything. It's receiving of any form. Okay. Compassion. Well, I've seen people who've received things given to them and taken care of them, and they go out. Well, we'll give you an example. Let's take Warren Buffett's kids. Warren Buffett's kids were pretty well taken care of, a lot of them. As a result of it, they're all into philanthropy. They give into philanthropy. They're taking the money that they inherited, and they're giving it off to philanthropy. Where I know people that actually had a challenging situation and they had to go become entrepreneurs, they're more likely to want to grow their wealth, and they're more likely to know that they have to have fair exchange to get that money. So the way we perceive our past will impact our future. And so anything you can do, doing the DeMartini method on dissolving shame and guilt, is to your advantage if you want to get wealth building. That's the first thing that you can do besides finding out where values are, wealth building values are in your life. Clear out your shame and guilt. Clear out everything you think you did that you don't think is magnificent. Anything you can't say thank you for yourself, anything you would not want anybody to know about you, I would go and do the DeMartini method and clear that. Or come to breakthrough and let me help you clear it or whatever. Because there's absolutely no reason to be carrying that around. It's just an imbalanced perspective, and it's not, you're not conscious of the upsides, because there's no such thing as a one-sided event. Just like this coronavirus, they're going to call it this devastating disaster, Corona. It's also going to be called Saint Corona. I already see it. It's very obvious. Right now, the pollution, all the stuff we've been worrying about, the pollution on the planet and the global impact on the pollution and all the CO2, all of that is being affected right now, and it's massively changed. I'm studying space, and I'm watching the satellites, and the satellites are watching the atmosphere change right now.
It is really inspiring.
Thank Corona, changing the entire pollution. Los Angeles right now has the cleanest air they've had in 18 years.
Yeah, that really is amazing. And if it's not called Saint Corona by somebody else, I'm sure you're going to make it famous as Saint Corona, because you've been calling it that.
I call it Saint Corona. I call it Saint Corona because the reason I joke about that is because they had devastating Andrew, Hurricane Andrew, 25, 30 years ago in Florida, wiped out a lot of Dade County, et cetera. They later called it, within 1 to 5 years, Saint Andrew. Why? Because it wiped out all the trashed up areas and got that into property development and upgraded it. And the property values went, I mean, amazingly well. Job opportunities boomed. It was one of the greatest things that happened in Florida. It upgraded the standards. I mean, all the building standards went up. All the value of the land went up. Everything went up. And that is now one of the biggest, hottest areas. So to see it as a disaster is only seeing one side and seeing a short-term thinking.
Thank you, Dr. DeMartini. It's definitely worth remembering that emotions destroy wealth and objective reason builds wealth. The bigger the problem you can solve, the bigger the potential income you can make. Before we close off this episode, if you've enjoyed this presentation and you'd love to continue learning from Dr. DeMartini, then please subscribe to this podcast, because that way you'll be notified when we add a new session. Also, if you'd love to be part of an online community, a group of like-minded people joined together from all over the globe to help each other stay inspired and keep focused during this pandemic, then please join us on Facebook and search for Stay Inspired with Dr. DeMartini, or type in demartini.inc/inspired. We'll also share the link in the show notes. You'll be able to interact live with Dr. DeMartini as he does weekly sessions in the group. Our goal is to help you remain poised and centered, inspired on purpose throughout this pandemic. Until next time, keep looking for the blessings, because the more you find, the more inspired you'll feel, regardless of what's going on in your outer world.